It is Friday, September 6, 2013. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Callums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. Support for KUAF comes from Nightbird Books, located on Dixon Street in Fayetteville. Nightbird is a locally owned and operated bookseller with a cafe offering local coffees, baked goods, and brewed beer on tap. An events calendar and more located on the web at nightbirdbooks.com.
Ahead on Ozarks, Michael Tilley from thecitywire.com discusses an unexpected auction involving two Arkansas banking firms and the latest construction numbers for the Fort Smith region and Northwest Arkansas.
Plus, Barrett Baber explains why the Stone County Jail was an inspiration for a song on his soon-to-be-released CD, and he'll play for us inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio.
First, Arkansas ranks second in the percentage of people with food insecurity, according to a report by the Department of Agriculture. That report says nearly 20% of Arkansans don't know where their next meal will come from. Tyler Lindsay with the Arkansas Food Bank says the perception of people struggling to provide food is often wrong.
One of the major misperceptions of it all is that these people aren't working. Actually, the majority of people who are on SNAP are in the workforce and work full-time jobs. They're supporting families of four. Some might be grandparents who are supporting grandchildren in the household. You know, a lot of these folks that are under it are, you know, hardworking Americans.
Lindsay says they're watching as Congress considers reducing funds for SNAP, commonly referred to as food stamps.
Of course, we are watching it because any sort of thing, any sort of cutting like that to SNAP cuts will only just increase the burden on us and the other food banks in the state and across the country, frankly.
He says the amount of food and volunteers needed at the Arkansas Food Bank has risen in recent years. They expect it to rise again this year.
This weekend, bow hunters will take to the Chaffee Crossing area to help thin the rampant deer population in the rapidly developing area of Fort Smith and Barling. In an interview with Ozarks at Large earlier this year, Corey Gray, the deer program coordinator for the Arkansas Game and Fish Commission, said that urban deer hunts like the one in the River Valley aren't open to just any hunters.
Those that apply have to go through an orientation, they have to go through different classes, they have to go through an urban deer hunt instruction class, they have to go through an international bow hunting course, and they have to take a proficiency test. And if they pass all those requirements, then they are awarded a permit to hunt in each one of the towns. So that's Game and Fish's role, is that we accept the applicants, we screen them to make sure there's no violations there enough to lose their license or hunting privileges. The Arkansas Bow Hunter Association has done an excellent job. They coordinate the proficiency test. They also work with the international bow hunting courses.
Last year, the Game and Fish Commission helped seven cities across the state hold urban archery hunts. Though Chaffee Crossing is within the most dense population area to hold an urban archery hunt to date, Gray said that safety is always of the highest concern with the urban deer seasons.
We always go into every hunt saying safety's first, hunting is second. When you look at the requirements of this hunt, it does deter a lot of the hunters. A lot of the hunters do not want to go through the requirements and the procedures to participate. But, again, it's hunting in an urban area. It's safety is the top priority. So we're going to screen a lot of individuals, and we're going to set up a lot of guidelines. You've got to hunt out of a stand. You cannot hunt off the ground. You can only hunt in designated areas. You've got to case your bow. You've got to prove to us you can operate that weapon, that bow, and shoot it accurately.
95 bow hunters have reportedly completed the necessary applications and safety courses to hunt in the Chaffee Crossing season, which runs through January 31st.
The Arkansas Razorback football team will take on the Samford Bulldogs Saturday night at War Memorial Stadium in Little Rock. About 50,000 fans are expected. Stadium spokesman Danny Joe Crawford says many of the tailgating road hogs have set up their RVs near the stadium and that overall security will be tight for tomorrow night's game.
We've had some heightened security measures, you know, due to, you know, the Boston bombing, you know, and you know, ever since, 9/11, I mean, there's, you know, some new procedures. There's bag checks, you know, and things like that.
Crawford says tailgating begins at 6 a.m. with kickoff at 6 p.m. At last check, tickets were still available for the game.
Northwest Arkansas Community College yesterday formally continued a longstanding safety and health alliance with two government administrations. Representatives with the U.S. Department of Labor Occupational Safety and Health Administration and the Arkansas Department of Labor met with NWAC officials to renew the agreement between the three organizations, which has been in place since 2005. NWAC officials estimate that the collaboration has allowed between 8 and 10,000 workers to attend low-cost or free training conferences hosted at the college, conferences which are aimed at improving workplace safety and worker well-being.
The city of Fayetteville is receiving a little help in the battle against graffiti. Earlier this week, Fayetteville in Bloom, a community involvement organization, donated $1,000 in gift cards to the Fayetteville Police Department and Solid Waste Division to purchase paint and other supplies for painting more murals around town. According to the city, graffiti has been a problem, but the presence of murals should help discourage further tagging.
Also in Fayetteville, fall bulky waste cleanups begin tomorrow. The first of four scheduled cleanups will take place in Ward 1 at the Shaver Foods parking lot on South Beechwood behind the Randall Tyson Track Complex and at the Solid Waste and Recycling Facility on Happy Hollow Road. The bulky waste cleanups are intended for the disposal of large bulky items that can't normally be disposed of through curbside pickup service. Items allowed include large furniture and appliances, limited amounts of construction material, lawn mowers, hot water heaters, and plumbing fixtures, but household garbage and hazardous waste will not be accepted.
After five sets last night, the Razorback volleyball team lost to Kansas at Barnhill Arena. During the match, junior Meredith Hayes scored 22 kills and 15 digs, while senior Emily Helm matched her career high with 27 digs. To finish the home-and-home series, the Razorbacks travel to Lawrence, Kansas tomorrow afternoon.
Mostly clear tonight with lows from 60 in northwest Arkansas to 69 in the Arkansas River Valley. Sunny with highs from 93 tomorrow in northwest Arkansas to 97 in the Arkansas River Valley. Mostly clear tomorrow night with lows from 63 degrees in northwest Arkansas to 71 degrees in the Arkansas River Valley.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me on the phone from Fort Smith is Michael Tilley. He is the editor and publisher of thecitywire.com that covers business, politics, culture, and more for the entire listening area. And a good Friday to you.
Yes, Friday. It's always, those are two words that go well together, good and Friday.
Well, let's start with news from the banking world. Something somewhat unexpected developed yesterday.
Unexpected is a good word for it. Out of the blue, little background first. Metropolitan National Bank is in a bankruptcy proceeding. And, you know, back in early July, a company, the financial fund out of Dallas, Ford Financial Fund out of Dallas, stepped up and said, we're going to buy them a little over $16 million. And because, you know, Metropolitan National Bank, which is expanded into Northwest Arkansas, they're really a Central Arkansas bank, just got in trouble. They just moved too fast. They got caught up in a lot of the real estate bubble. So this looked like, Ford Financial was going to wrap it up. I mean, here in early September, supposed to be the closing dates on the deal. Yesterday, out of the blue, both Arvest and Pine Bluff Bay Simmons submitted bids. We don't know what Arvest bid is. They're a privately held company, so we don't have to know. But Simmons is publicly held, and in an SEC filing, they said they're going to bid $16.9 million, which we're estimating is more than Ford Financial. So this is, you know, the question now is why would Arvest and why would Pine Bluff want these things? And we're tracking the story down as we speak. Kim Souza's working on it, and we'll have that story later this Friday on that. But it raises a lot of questions. You know, Arvest is already in the Northwest Arkansas market, and they're in Central Arkansas. I mean, the best we can estimate right now is this is an effort by both banks to shore up their market share in the two markets in Central Arkansas and Northwest Arkansas. So was a big surprise. Arvest is so big, and you've got some guy with the last name of Walton who could probably just write a check and wouldn't hurt his bank account too much. But you know, Jim Walton's also been a very solid businessman. He just doesn't move on something just because he can. I mean, there has to be a good business reason for it. So this is very interesting. I mean, if you're have any connection to the financial world or you're interested in that sector, this is like politics for the banking community.
Well, and now so there will be an auction?
Yes, and it's a closed auction. We don't know where it will be, undisclosed location, a super, super double secret thing. But September 9th, so we'll see.
That's Monday.
Yes, right. I mean, it's right around the corner, so this thing's going to go down pretty quickly. We're very curious. Like I said, Kim Sousa's talking to several banking experts, banking watchers around the state to see what they make of it. But it definitely caught everybody. It caught us media types. It caught us off guard yesterday.
Well, I want to go back to this closed auction. So all those who have qualified to make bids, I know it's closed. It's at an undisclosed location. Do you even know the format? I mean, does it start like interest A says we'll pay $16 million and interest B says, okay, I'll go $16.5 million? Or how does this work?
Well, that's a good question. Several years ago, watched a similar proceeding on a much fewer dollars were being exchanged, I'll just say that. But you essentially had a bankruptcy trustee, and it didn't take long, and it was just real informal. And, yes, it was almost like, what do you want? Okay, he's doing this. What are you willing to give? And it'll be up to the trustee. It'll be up to the bankruptcy trustee, I'm assuming, to determine how the process will work. But I shouldn't even have speculated, because there's any number of ways it can be handled, and it's probably silly on my part to speculate.
Well, sometime next week we should know who the new owner is.
Right. Yes, okay. We should. Yes. Whoever the new owner is will proudly put that word out, I'm sure.
Look for the press release.
Right.
Construction numbers good from both Northwest Arkansas and the Fort Smith Metro this week.
Yes, it's no surprise. You know, Northwest Arkansas is hot, and it's really been driven by residential construction. I mean, residential permits, a new commercial permits were up almost 28% in July, and the new permit part of that was they started about 151 new homes in the top four cities up there. Those values were $34 million. That's up almost 15%. So it's still rocking and rolling in Northwest Arkansas. But interestingly enough, also in the Fort Smith area, permit values continue to rise. You know, there aren't that many bright spots in the Fort Smith area, but this is certainly one of them. Their year-to-date permit, when you look at Smith, Greenwood, and Van Buren, their year-to-date permit values are up 44%. So that's pretty healthy. And again, surprisingly enough, a lot of that's the residential sector. The residential sector in the Fort Smith area continues to hold its own. It's the home sales in the Fort Smith area aren't near what they are in the rest of the state, especially compared to Northwest Arkansas. But if we're looking for a bright spot in that Fort Smith economy, the construction sector, the new home sector is it.
Last night, Congressman Steve Womack of the 3rd District in Arkansas had a town hall meeting in Fort Smith. About 250 people attended. Among the topics of discussion, upcoming possible military action against Syria and the Affordable Care Act.
Right, and Representative Womack, a little bit of a surprise, because Representative Womack has become kind of a, leadership mouthpiece, but that's not fair to him. I mean, he's had some different views, but primarily his take on issues are, you know, what House Speaker Boehner and Majority Leader Cantor kind of say they are. And the House leadership now is leaning toward action in Syria, but last night Representative Womack said he doesn't see that. And he's a former colonel in the Army. He knows what it's like to and he's served in Egypt, took a troop over there to serve in the peacekeeping area. But he said that he's leaning no. The only thing that would change his mind, there's apparently a security update, a classified briefing on Monday, as Congress returns from the recess, and he said if he learns something in there that changes his mind, he's given himself an out, is essentially what he's done. But he right now he's leaning no towards Syria. Now on Obamacare, he's taking a beating, and the City Wire had an editorial, which we, I guess you could say, were part of that beating. But he's part of this group. There's a real split right now among conservatives about whether do you defund Obamacare through the continuing resolution, or do you just wait till later? Because there's this political strategy among Republicans that they think they'll get beat up in the 2014 elections, and that they could lose seats in the House and lose more seats in the Senate. So the House leadership is making a very political strategy, while some of the more conservative elements and some of the more smaller government elements in the Republican Party aren't happy with that. And Womack is finding himself split on that. And there were some Tea Party folks from Benton County that were in Fort Smith last night to protest his decision, because Womack is siding with the leadership. He says now is not the time to defund during this continuing resolution battle that's going to come up when Congress returns. So it's going to be interesting how he balances that. I don't see Womack getting in too much political trouble in the 3rd District.
No.
He won 22% in the last election. I have not heard of a name bannered about that would challenge him, either in the GOP primary on the Democratic side, that would have a chance of beating him. But if this continues, if the split continues, there would be a little bit of chink in the armor, but I just still don't see how that would hurt Womack's chance for reelection.
Finally, I need a prediction for you for this weekend's football game.
If the Razorbacks don't win, I will cry. That's my prediction.
Oh, I was. I'm sorry. I meant the Hendricks-Westminster football game.
Well, my prediction is that I predict I'll have to read up on who those teams are.
Okay. Hendricks, first football game since something like 1960.
Oh, that's right. And they have a new logo, a new Warriors? Or?
They are the Warriors, but I have not seen the new logo. But
yeah, I think somebody sent me the logo. It looks like Fabio dressed up. like the Fabio William Wallace look. It's not really a Warriors thing.
Right. Michael Tilley is the editor and publisher of thecitywire.com that covers business, politics, culture, and football logos. Michael, thank you so much.
All right, you're welcome.
Next time on Ask Me Another, Peter Sagal, the sheriff of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, recalls a showdown in his family's grocery store.
Because I'm me, I'd have a little bit of dialogue with the yogurt. So, I told you never to come back to this dairy section again.
Join me, Deputy Ophira Eisenberg, for NPR's guiltiest and most puzzling pleasure.
Ask Me Another tomorrow morning at 11 on KUAF 91.3 FM.
The Arkansas Razorbacks football team will host Samford in Little Rock tomorrow night in an attempt to improve to 2-0 on the season. But the most intriguing college football game in the state may kick off a few hours earlier and a half hour's drive north in Conway. Hendricks College, a small private school, will field a team for the first time in more than 50 years. Evan Demerol covers sports on his blog, The Sports Seer, and recently wrote about the return of football to Hendricks and other small liberal arts colleges across the country. He also recently talked about the subject with Karen Trico Stewart from our content partner, KUAR.
It's a trend that is certainly reaching historic heights. This fall alone, I believe 13 small colleges are starting or restarting their football programs, and that's an all-time high. And they're trying to generate revenue, where in the past their revenue model might have been based more on endowments. And since the recession, they're needing to essentially use increased enrollment as a revenue source. And what easier way to bring in 50, 60, 80, upward to 110 students than by creating a college football team? A secondary reason is a lot of these small liberal arts colleges over the last few decades have had an increasingly high number of females compared to males. So that ratio is getting out of whack a little bit, and a lot of colleges would like to see more males and bringing that ratio closer to 50-50. And again, a football team is all males. Even though you have to bring in Division III level a female team at the same time, that team is not going to be anywhere near as big as a football team.
And so one college restarting a football program is here in Arkansas, Hendricks College in Conway. What's the history of the football program there?
A rich history. In 1913, Hendricks defeated Ole Miss, now a major college SEC program. They beat them 8-6 in Conway. You know, in other years, they beat the University of Memphis by 40 or 50 points, a lot. What's now the University of Memphis. Then it was not called that. They played the University of Arkansas multiple times. They were beaten soundly a few times by the Razorbacks. At the same time, they tied the Razorbacks twice, 0-0. And in the mid-1920s, they played the Razorbacks at Cavanaugh Field in Little Rock. And they lost narrowly to the Razorbacks, but 6,000 people attended that game. Up to that point, the largest attended sporting event in Arkansas, many people thought.
So, Evan, by the 1950s, Hendricks football was having trouble hanging with other teams in its conference, the Arkansas Intercollegiate Conference. What happened?
Essentially, Karen, what happened was the other schools in Arkansas, particularly the state universities, began to allocate more money toward athletics. They began to fund scholarships. This provided an enticement for some of the better players in the area to play for these teams, as opposed to Hendricks. What this meant was not only would you have some better players on the other teams, but you'd have much more of the players. And when the teams would actually play together, you would have a situation where the Hendricks foes could substitute in mass, platoon style, kind of like Nolan Richardson's Razorbacks in the early 1990s, and just run Hendricks to the ground because Hendricks didn't have enough players to substitute that much. I spoke to Bill Wilson, who is now the federal judge of the U.S. District Court of the Eastern District of Arkansas, and he played for the Hendricks football team in 1959 and 1960, and here's what he had to say.
You know, they could put in fresh players. When you played both ways and in the fourth quarter, you looked up at a guy with a clean pair of pants on, fresh and pawing and ready to go. You just can't do as well when you're worn out.
In 1960, Hendricks' leadership decided to shutter its football program, not just because the team was performing poorly in some seasons on the field, but because of certain financial conditions.
So what do you think is the future of the Hendricks football program?
Well, Hendricks football will not be as popular as, obviously, the University of Arkansas football. It will not be as popular as UCA football across town in Conway. But that's not the point. That's not what the leaders are trying to do with their program. They're trying to find a niche. They're trying to find a way to market the team as, in a way, an alternative to bigger football. At this level, Division III, you can make an argument that these are legitimate student athletes insofar as a lot of their grade point averages and a lot of their ACT scores coming into college are just as high, if not higher, than the non-football player at Hendricks. For Hendricks, football is part of a larger $100 million campaign. President Ellis Arnold told me to expand the college. Of course, when you bring in more students through football, your enrollment will expand. Right now, Ellis Arnold, the coaches, the players I've spoken with, all seem extremely optimistic about this season, about the prospect of football beyond this season. Even if this season the team does struggle to get wins, I think they feel like they're building the foundation for something enduring. Here's what President Arnold had to tell me.
I hear a lot of positive things, a lot of positive energy from non-alums, just community leaders and others who can't wait to come to the football game. If there's anything that might be construed as a negative, is somebody might think that what we're going to end up doing is nothing more than just another version of high school football. Clearly, this is not major college football, but I think they will be impressed with the quality of what they see as time goes by.
At first, some people had reservations. Bill Wilson, who is a board member, was at first against bringing back football, he said. But as he kind of got deeper into the issue, he said three reasons really swayed him to change his mind. First, it was made clear that there would not be athletic scholarships at this level, so there would be more revenue coming in. Second, there has been a separate fundraising campaign among supporters of the program for football only. So there's another revenue stream, which is important because you're not going to be making a lot of money off ticket sales here. In fact, tickets are free for these football games. You're not going to be making a lot of money off merchandise sales. Finally, Bill Wilson said that he was very much on board with the gender equality issue as far as getting the ratio of male to female students closer to 50-50. And in May 2008, the board did vote on whether to bring football back or not. According to Bill Wilson, about all of the 40 members who voted, board members, voted yes, except for one. A vast majority wanted to bring it back at that point.
Evan Demerl writes about sports at the blog thesportsseer.com. He also talked about the return of football at Hendricks College this weekend with Karen Trico-Stewart from our content partner, KUAR. It is Friday, September 6, 2013. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
With us, Becca Martin-Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Well, kids, it's that time of year.
Which time?
Yeah, football, Almost Bikes, Blues, and Barbecue, school.
You cannot possibly do all the things you want to do in a weekend time of year.
I mean, I'm doing my best.
I know you are, but not all of us can move that
fast.
But
it is now physically impossible.
Yes.
Well, don't tell me that, because then I will find a way.
Okay, kid, not all of us can move that fast.
Yeah. I said I'm speaking for myself. It's fine.
So we have a suggested itinerary.
Okay.
And sometimes there's more than one option because I couldn't decide either. So tonight, there is an author talk at 7 o'clock at the Fayetteville Public Library.
Part of the True Lit Fest.
With Jack Gantos, who is the author of more than 40 books, little kids to upper elementary and middle school to young adult books. He's lots of fun. I did a Q&A with him, and he's lots of fun. So that happens at 7 at the library, and it's free. Or you can go see The Nerd at the Art Center of the Ozarks in Springdale.
I've never seen this one.
Hilarious show. Absolutely roll in the aisles and snort funny. And tonight is opening night.
Is it? Who wrote it?
Larry Shue. Who also wrote The Foreigner.
Okay, yes.
He wrote two shows and then was killed in a plane crash.
I did not know that.
And his shows are done
again and again. Because they're that funny. Showtime 7:30, and again, it's opening night. Tickets are $10 to $20. Tomorrow morning, you get up and you go to the Duggar Family Flea Market and Auction. Which is likely where I'll be. No, they've decided to clean out the warehouse after 29 years of marriage and 19 children.
Oh, I can imagine how many things they've accumulated.
And then they've asked for donations because they're going to give all the proceeds to Arkansas Children's Hospital.
Oh, well, that's nice.
Because the littlest person was there for 6 months because she was born early and born tiny. And she's 3 and a half now.
Oh, good.
Which is hard to imagine.
Mm-hmm. Won't this be part of the television show on TLC?
It will, in fact, be part of the 7th season of 19 Kids and Counting, which debuts September 17th. Flea market time is from 8 to 2 tomorrow, and there's an auction at 10 for some of the bigger items, which apparently include vehicles. Mm. And that happens at 500 Arbor Acres Avenue in Springdale. Midday tomorrow, you must go to the Wiener Takes All races.
In Bella Vista.
I missed those last year. I think
championship
was bad weather.
Weenie dog races. I think so, too. I think it was storming. But it's now part of a new festival called Heydays. And that means there'll be food and music and all these other things surrounding the weenie dog races. Or you can spend the day at the True Lit Festival at the Fayetteville Public Library because there's all sorts of things going on there, or the Slaughter Pen Music Jam in downtown Bentonville.
Right. All of this going on.
That takes us to Saturday evening, which I've divided by counties.
Okay.
If you're in Benton County, you must go see Julius Caesar. This year's Shakespeare in the Park, produced by the Classic Ledge Theater Troupe, stars Mark Landon Smith and Justin Schauer and a bunch of other people you know and love. The script has been cut to 75 minutes.
Okay.
Not bad. And Justin Schauer wants playgoers to know that although this is considered a tragedy, it's going to be fun. Because you will get to do what they did in Shakespeare's time, which is chat and walk around and eat and all those things that used to happen during a play. Okay, this happens at 6 o'clock at Lawrence Plaza in Bentonville. It will be in Fayetteville the next two weekends. It is free. If you're in Washington County, It's Dog's Night Out at Dog Party in Tawnytown.
Fundraiser for the Humane Society.
Food and music. They say a gourmet progressive dinner for the dogs and food and music for the humans. And it's $25 for two people and one dog, and $10 for each additional guest, no matter how many legs it has. If you care where I'll be, that's my choice for Saturday night. The Spiritualist is going on at Nadine Baum Studios in Fayetteville. It's a script by Bob Ford, one of the founders of Theater Squared, about a lady who sees dead people and speaks to dead people and writes music for famous dead people like Beethoven. Showtime is 7:30 and tickets start at $15. If you're in the River Valley, 12 Angry Men is opening at Fort Smith Little Theater. A jury deliberation about the fate of a 16-year-old who has been accused of stabbing his father to death. A little Shakespeare in that, too.
Mm-hmm.
Presented again by the Fort Smith Little Theater at 8 o'clock. Tickets are $10. And then on Sunday afternoon,
yes,
you can go see Jersey Boys, one of the last two performances, at the Walton Arts Center. Tickets start at $44. That's at 2 o'clock.
And you really should go to that. I got to go opening night, and it was a lot of fun. Everybody I went with enjoyed it. Everybody I went with enjoyed it.
And you didn't really know what to think going in, did you?
I did not know much about it. It's just something I've heard about for forever. You know, people have said they wanted to come here. I had a friend audition for it a long time ago, and so I've just heard of it forever, but never quite knew the story.
I bet you heard songs that you recognize, even if I hadn't told you the title beforehand.
Right. Yeah. No, I was surprised by how many of the songs I did recognize. Right. I think it was one of those things, bless my mother for having me listen to all kinds of music.
Bless your mother for being your mother.
Yes, for knowing, but I recognized a lot, even though I didn't quite know who sang it. But yeah.
And so if you survive until Sunday evening,
mm-hmm.
community storytelling, speak for yourself.
Maxine's,
a new part of a series at Maxine's Tap Room at 7 o'clock. This is, of course, hosted by Artist Laboratory Theater and the Big Picture House. Good luck.
All right, so all of that happening, and that just got us through Sunday evening.
Exactly.
Okay, thank you, Becca.
Becca Martin Brown is features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Theater Squared's Season 8 continues with performances of The Spiritualist, a world premiere by Robert Ford, through September 15th at Walton Arts Center's Nadine Baum Studios. Inspired by a true story, this comic drama follows a widow's unlikely rise to fame after channeling the spirits of dead composers and completing their unfinished symphonies. Tickets and more information available at theater2.org or 443-5600. The Eureka Springs Original Ozark Folk Festival presents a live recording of Michael Jonathan's Wood Songs Old Time Radio Hour on Saturday, October 26th, in the City Auditorium. Submissions are now being accepted for local talent to perform during this worldwide broadcast. Entries must be received by September 15th. Information is available online at ozarkfolkfestival.com.
Hello, I'm Robert Ginsberg, your host for Shades of Jazz every Friday and Saturday night, beginning at 10 p.m. On this Friday edition of Shades of Jazz, I will feature an exclusive interview with saxophonist and bandleader Jay Bekenstein. He's the founding member of the group Spirogyra, who you hear in the background, and they'll be performing in Eureka Springs at Jazz Eureka on September 14th. Jay talks about the 30-year history of this band, actually closer to 40-year history of the band, and where they've been and where they're going. We'll also hear music from Jason Marsalis and Keith Jarrett, Sonny Rollins, and much more. That's the Friday edition of Shades of Jazz, beginning at 10 p.m.
This is Ozarks at Large. Fayetteville High School teacher Barrett Baber has been involved with music most of his life. September 14th at the UARC Bowl, he will celebrate the release of his latest album, Battlefield Us. Recently, Barrett, along with his producer and pianist Aaron Schauer, paid a visit to the Furman Garner Performance Studio. During our conversation, Barrett discussed how his father's profession eventually led to him becoming a musician.
My father was a preacher. Was a preacher in eastern Arkansas, there in Crittenden County in West Memphis, and actually at Marion First Baptist Church, which is a small town kind of right next to West Memphis and just across the river from Memphis, Tennessee. So that's where it all began, where the singing began, you know, just like a lot of people in the South and in church, going to church, singing in the kids' choir, preacher's son, singing up on stage, that kind of thing.
As the preacher's son, were you required to participate musically, or you just decided that's how you wanted to?
I was required to be present, so I never missed. And I guess it wasn't really until junior high school that I kind of figured out I had a little bit of a gift for vocally and that I could sing. And so, yeah, it was once that was kind of discovered, then I was always involved somehow musically at Marion First Baptist Church.
Did you have any singing lessons or anything like that?
No, not as a kid. So I went to Marion High School and started in the choir in 10th grade. And that was really where it kind of took shape as far as vocally. I had a teacher, someone that knew what they were doing, that kind of steered me in the direction of some classical voice stuff. And then also was just able to help me vocally kind of find myself. And then on from there to college, where I majored in music and did some vocal stuff at Ouachita Baptist.
And when did you learn to play guitar?
That was at Ouachita Baptist University. So I got a voice scholarship and moved down to Arkadelphia and started school and was sitting in my brother's dorm room. My brother also went to school there, and he played guitar, and I picked up the guitar, and I knew how to hold one. I didn't know how to do anything else, and he showed me G, C, and D on the guitar, the three most basics, and then an E minor. And so, like, pretty much it was like I taught myself from there. I've learned everything else myself. So he showed me those few chords, and I started writing right away and singing right away.
And you spent some time performing. I mean, like you said, you're right there near the border. You can just easily go across Tennessee to Memphis.
Yeah. Spent a lot of time running the streets of Memphis in high school and probably doing some things I shouldn't have done over there and probably being in places I was too young to be in. But it was really awesome. You know, and I hear all the time, even on this radio station on NPR, about the music that comes out of Eastern Arkansas, that, you know, just legends, you know, Levon Helm and blues guitar legends over there. And so I got to, you know, I got to be grow up around that vibe, that feeling, that flatland vibe over there in Memphis. And so it was excellent. I get to run up and down Beale Street and listen to fantastic guitarists and hear people sing. And so, yeah, I spent a lot of time running around Memphis, hearing, going to concerts and being exposed to a lot of culture over there.
And somewhere in all of this, you also lived in Nashville?
Yeah, so I went to Ouachita Baptist University and then left there in 2002 and moved to Nashville and kind of apprenticed under an Arkansas songwriter named Danny Tate, who's really good. And he kind of took me under his wing for a year and taught me a few things about how to really write and some ideas on how to get songs where they need to be and a little more radio friendly and more concise. And he taught me a lot of good tricks. And so I lived there for a while and then auditioned for American Idol in 2002. And that's when I obviously didn't win, but I was on season two, did really well, did good enough to go to California for a week and made it to the top 48. And at that time, I think I was probably, I'm certain I was the, you know, the Arkansan who had made it the farthest
at that time,
sure,
of course.
And so that was a really good test for me. I got to go out to California and sing with some really talented people and be around a lot of, musicians and people who are really talented and kind of gauge myself against them. Is this guy from Arkansas, do I have what it takes to even be in the same room as these people? And the answer was yes. And so it was good for me.
Well, how'd you end up here in Northwest Arkansas?
Northwest Arkansas, that's a good story too. I went back to college at UCA and got my degree in communications and started selling radio advertising at 103.7 The Buzz in Little Rock, a sports talk radio station. And met my wife there and married her. And we lived there for a few years and did that for a few years. This entire time, I was still gigging all over the state doing acoustic shows. And then had the opportunity to move to Northwest Arkansas and sell TV for KNWA, the NBC affiliate here. And so did that. And I moved up here. And my wife got an excellent job in town. And so that was 4 years ago now, almost 5 years ago now. So it's been loving it ever since. Living in Northwest Arkansas, playing my guitar up here, it's the best.
And you've been making friends here, and I'm going to bring one of those friends in, Aaron.
Okay.
How did you, do you want to tell me a little bit of how you guys met and how this relationship happened?
Well,
it's a beautiful relationship,
yeah,
too, by the way.
It is. Barrett, he would open up for one of my bands often.
Which band?
And Boom Kinetic.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually, at some point, I started working at KNWA as the managing editor, and he called me down one day and said, "Hey, man, you want to come jam on some gigs with me playing bass?" And I was like, "Yeah, I'd love to." And so we did that a bit, and eventually he called me one day and said, "Hey, would you want to produce my album? And I said, absolutely.
Yeah, and it just worked out because they Boom Kinetic had just, you know, moved into a rehearsal space, a studio, and gotten the ability to actually record. And so Aaron was kind of cutting his teeth on recording with Pro Tools and getting set up there, and I was in need of somebody that kind of could help me facilitate a full band record. And so that's my last record that we released in April last year. Aaron produced, and that was called Colt Square Sessions.
Colt Square Sessions.
Yeah. And so we were super proud of that one, but we knew right away, you know, let's get some material and let's go back to work and get working on a new project, and let's try to do it within a, you know, another year, year and a half.
And you're going to officially release the new one, Battlefield Us?
Battlefield Us is the title, and September it releases 14th? On September 14th. Mm-hmm. That's right.
Can you tell me a little bit about the process of this one? Was it a long process? Or
actually, it didn't feel like a long process. I mean, with everybody's schedules, you know, there are some times where you're like, okay, could everybody be here on this night? As far as the, okay, let's come in and record it, let's mix it, that wasn't that long of a process from my perspective. Now, the writing part of it, I'll add this. We right after we did Colt Square Sessions, when we released it, we had a CD release party. And we recorded that and released a live album. And there were a few songs on that album that we heard with the full band, you know, for the first time, that were some of his older songs from some acoustic albums. And I think we both kind of heard those for the first time, full band in their full glory, and said, okay, we've got to produce those. And then you had a handful of other songs.
Yeah. And so this record has actually got a few songs that are old, that I recorded on, you know, demos, acoustic projects, some of my previous stuff. And when we heard them, when I finally put a band together, because I'd been gigging just solo acoustic for so many years, that when we finally put the band together and started playing songs like Guys Like Me and Roll that are on this record that were also on old acoustic records, it was like, we got to put this. We got to go all the way and put a couple of these songs and give them justice, you know, and put them full band. And so there's a couple of oldie but goodies that if someone, you know, is a Barrett Baber fan and has been, you know, for a very long time, not a very long time, but has been for the, you know, the decade or so that I've been doing this, that they'll recognize. But I'm sure they'll be pleased too, because they're new and they're fresh and they got a full band sound to them rather than just acoustically driven.
And Aaron, what was it like for you to be producer on this album? Were you only producer, or did you play on it as well?
I produced, mixed, and I played on it.
Oh, wow.
So I was pretty hands-on in the process. Not to mention just being a fan of Barrett's voice, a fan of Barrett's songwriting, was just the reason that I wanted to be so involved, and I have been so involved. You know, the way I wanted to do the album, and this thought occurred to me long before we started really working on it, was the production needed to be kind of simple. It needed to be, because we had awesome musicians. We had Brandon Robald and TJ Scarlett and Miguel Gamboa. And, you know, a few of those are guys that play in a lot of bands around town, and they're really good at what they do. And I wanted to capture that because I felt that lived up to the songwriting and the vocal skills. And so that was my goal. So basically my job as an engineer wasn't that hard. Just capture the sound, capture the performance, you know, make sure that everybody's comfortable with performing the songs. And then basically I just turned it up and it sounded great.
And of course you can't have an album without songwriting. And there are 11 tracks on here. And Barrett, you wrote or co-wrote all but one. Mm-hmm. Losing Hand.
Losing Hand.
Was written by Zach Gump.
Zach Gump is a fantastic songwriter. Just so happens to be one of the frontmen for a great band called Boom Kinetic. Surprise, surprise, right? And I really can't say enough about Boom Kinetic and those guys, Aaron and Miguel and Greg. And all the guys in Boom Kinetic that really embraced me as an artist, as a solo acoustic artist, let me open for them at big shows at the House of Blues in Dallas and big places like that. And they didn't have to do that. And so, you know, I wanted to kind of almost as a tribute to them and to Zach especially, is do one of his tunes. And it's a fantastic song. And Aaron had played it for me before. It's an unreleased track that he had done before, but he'd never released for anybody to hear or to sell on iTunes or anything like that. And so I heard it and immediately kind of felt like, hey, we can do this one justice. And there's, you know, I had some ideas. Aaron and I both had ideas to make it kind of a banjo-driven, you know, Mumford kind of feel. And so we didn't have a song like that on the record yet. And so that really rounded it out. And I think it's an awesome way to end a really fun project, the last song on the record.
Well, one of the songs I want to ask you about is Prisoner Worship at the Stone County Jail.
Yeah,
is that a true story?
That is a true story. That is a true story. So I dated a girl for a little while when I was living in Conway from a place called Mountain View, Arkansas, which is the folk music capital of the world, maybe even. So they have big festivals, and it's, you know, it's a small town. It's kind of country. Her father was was very conservative, and I was a little older. I'd, you know, left school, lived in Nashville, and I'm back in school, and here I was dating this girl, and you know, normally I'm really good with the parents. You know, like, I go meet the parents, and like, I'm the guy. You know, I give them I know how to firm handshake a dad and give him, like, you know, give him the old wink and Eddie Haskell, you know, like, you pat him on the shoulder and talk to him about football and that kind of thing. And but this guy wasn't very excited at all about his daughter dating me, the musician. You know, I spent a lot of my time in some places that probably he didn't want his daughter to be. And I understand that, you know, now as a father, I can understand where he might be coming from there. But so I go up to meet him, and sure enough, he wakes me up one morning and asked me to grab my guitar, and which I always had with me, and I had. And we get in the car, and we start driving, you know, through rural, you know, northern Arkansas, and we pull up to the Stone County Jail. And we walk in, and it's me and this guy and a bunch of, you know, drunks and, you know, drug addicts and tired people, or people who are not happy about where they are in life. And so I sat at the Stone County Jail and led the prisoner worship one Sunday morning for this girl's father. And so it is a true story. I was very, very uptight about the whole thing, but I don't think he kind of underestimated my skills. See, I don't think he knew I was a preacher's kid, but I don't think he knew that I could, you know, I could bring it. So we sat in there and sang "Just As I Am" and "Amazing Grace," and I rocked him. I rocked them that day, my friends.
That was Barrett Baber and Aaron Schauer inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio. The Battlefield Us release show is scheduled for the evening of September 14th at the UARC Bowl in Fayetteville. Doors open at 7:30. Luke Wade and No Civilians will begin performing around 8:30. The event is sponsored by Core Brewing and Distilling Company, and some of their drinks will be available. Tickets are $11 and can be purchased at barrettbaber.com. During their visit to the studio, Barrett and Aaron were joined by drummer Miguel Gamboa, and they performed an original song titled "Drop Dead Redhead."
Ooh, hot damn, whiskey so smooth last Saturday night. Had a notion for commotion, gonna find what I can find. Had the radio up with the windows down, driving no blue all over town. Slow down, cause the lady's coming up on the right hand side. I slowed down, said, "What's your name?" She jumped in, said, "Do you got what it takes?" She was a drop dead redhead, turning me inside out. I was straight up, full falling to ever get out of my bright blue pickup truck. Can't get it through my head. Oh, you never turn loose of a drop dead redhead. Nope.
To hear the trio perform the title track from Battlefield Us, visit OzarksAtLarge.com.
When the town of West Texas blew up, it unveiled a lack of information about chemical accidents.
The things that are not being collected as data are frequently horrifying accidents that kill people. But no one in Washington wants to talk about how to keep track of it.
What's going on and how to fix it? I'm Steve Kerwood, and that's next time on Living on Earth from PRI.
Living on Earth, Sunday evening at 5 on KUAF.
Support for Ozarks at Large comes in part from the University of Arkansas's Women's Giving Circle. Support for KUAF comes from Dog Party USA, hosting its annual Dogs Night Out Saturday, September 7th at 6 p.m. This fundraiser is a progressive meal for the dogs and an evening of food and music for their owners. Tickets are available at the door with proceeds to benefit the Humane Society of the Ozarks. More information is available on Facebook or at dogpartyusa.com.
If you have Alzheimer's disease or think you may have Alzheimer's disease, Health Initiatives Research is seeking participants to evaluate the effectiveness and safety of an oral study drug that may slow the progression of mild to moderate Alzheimer's disease. More information is available at 871-1771.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Rogers, Fort Smith, Jane, Missouri.
Jane, Missouri. They're in McDonald County, Missouri.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that Henry Fonda filmed a movie near Jane decades ago. It was about Jesse James.
Oh, probably.
Yeah, because there's all the Jesse James caves and everything up there.
Right. That's what I hear.
Well, there you go. You'll be driving through Jane this weekend.
I'm not sure which way we're going, but I'll be in Missouri.
Yeah.
All right. We're headed to Lufest in St. Louis.
Which is a music festival.
It is a music festival. But
are you setting a personal record for music festivals attended this year?
I kind of am.
I think you already have.
I already have, actually. I'm about one a month, I think, right now.
Good for you.
Yeah, it just kind of happened.
Who's the headliner for the who are you most excited to see?
I'm really excited to see The Killers.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I was really excited to see Alabama Shakes, except I'm going to see them tonight.
At the Amp.
So I wouldn't be the first. I mean, I'll be excited to see them again.
Right.
But I get to see them for the first time tonight at the Amp. So, you know.
Yeah.
That'll work.
If people who follow the Grateful Dead were called deadheads, what would you call someone? You're an Alabama Shaker.
Probably Shakers.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I went to The Spiritualist last night.
What did you think? Because I know you hadn't seen it. I had seen a workshop version a few years ago.
I think it's wildly inventive. Mm-hmm. It's like nothing you've seen before.
But it's based on a true story, which was fun.
Yes. And then sort of expounded.
Sure.
Amy Herzberg is great. The entire cast is great. It's a very good time.
And is it the guy that played Poe that's playing?
He's Franz Liszt.
Okay.
Stephen Markoff.
Well, that's good because I liked him in The Fall of the House.
Yeah, well, you'll like him in this then
as well. Well, perfect. I will try and work that into my schedule.
All right. That continues tonight. The run goes through the 15th.
Yes, so I still have time.
You still have a little bit of time.
A little bit of time.
But tickets are scarce.
Okay, so I will figure this out.
All right. Ozarks at Large, a production of KUF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
Thanks for listening.